The following is a special Sports Radio 1290 presentation. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show's playoff preview. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
PM here on Sports Radio 1290. You're listening to the special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's the playoff preview edition. We heard from Kevin Allen earlier in the show that any of this program will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. You can subscribe to it and have each and every week, each and every episode of the show sent directly to your iPod. Earlier today, Richard had the pleasure to sit down and chat with Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail. Richard talked with Eric about the Western Conference and the playoffs that got underway there on Wednesday night. Here is that interview between Richard and Eric DeHatchick in its entirety.
We're now joined on the line by Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail. Eric, great to have you on again.
Always a pleasure.
Great, and of course, if you weren't aware, Eric's joined us for basically all the predictions for the past couple of years, both playoffs and regular season. And today, we're going to chat with him about the Western Conference. And you know, Eric, no better place to start than Vancouver. I mean, this is the team that's been talked about, especially in Canada, throughout the season. And somehow, some way, based on all the possibilities yesterday and the day prior, the Canucks are, of course, matched up against the Blackhawks. And how do you see that matchup working for Vancouver?
Well, you know, first of all, I mean, it's not the ideal matchup, obviously. You know, they've been eliminated by the Blackhawks in each of the past two seasons, and it isn't much of a reward for having the best record in the National Hockey League in 117 points. It reminds me a little bit about what happened a couple of years ago when Anaheim snuck in as an eighth seed and played San Jose in the first round and ended up taking them out. I think Los Angeles, which is what it looked like it was going to be with about a day to go in the season, would have been a much better matchup, not only because they beat the Kings in the playoffs last year, but because LA is missing those two top scorers and seems to be staggering into the playoffs. But having said that, I just think that that Chicago is not the team that it was. It has gone backwards, and I think Vancouver is not the team that it was when it lost to Chicago last year. It has gone forward, and I think that it has gone forward enough that that they should be the favorites in this series, and I believe are going to win this series. I mean, they were through my town, Calgary, on Saturday. I had a chance to speak extensively with Roberto Luongo because he didn't play in the games. They had lots of time after the morning skate. I quizzed him about any number of the issues that have plagued him in the past, and what came across after a long conversation is a guy that's very confident, a guy who's amended his playing style a little bit so he's deeper in the net, probably isn't going to get bumped as much as he did last year by Bufflin and Ladd and Versteeg and all those guys. And plus, those guys aren't there anyway. I think that, and everybody talked about Chicago's depth being not what it was. I think that has been the case. You know, you watch them play right now, and they're just not getting as much from their secondary guys as they did from the guys that were there last year. So when you add it all up, it looks to me as if Vancouver should be able to get by Chicago, and maybe not even that might not even be that difficult.
I'm in agreement with you there. My only concern, well, basically two concerns, Eric. I mean, the first might be the lack of, obviously, Malhotra and Torres for the first two games. And the second, when really looking closely at the numbers, and it's hard to find any flaws in Vancouver, is Vancouver does tend to take a lot of minor penalties, and I worry a bit about maybe, you know, them getting down a man, and Chicago's a pretty good power play going to work.
Yeah, well, and those are, you know, valid considerations, but as you said, you know, Torres will be back probably for the games that matter the most, which are the two on the road in Chicago. I think they can get by with him not being in the lineup at home, because I think they'll get the energy from the crowd. You know, the other day they played Aaron Rome up there, and, you know, he wasn't bad. And the one thing that I've found in the past, you know, dating back to the Gretzky Oilers years, is that, you know, on a short-term basis, if you're missing a couple of key guys up front, it just means that you get more ice, you give more ice time to the top players. So, you know, if we get two extra minutes out of the Sedins, you know, Burrows and Kessler, that really isn't going to set Vancouver back too badly. I'm really impressed with how Ryan Kessler has played for the team this year. And it isn't just the fact that, you know, he's a 40-goal scorer, but he's won all kinds of key faceoffs for them, you know, pivotal in that penalty-killing unit, which has been very good. You know, when you think about the possibility of them running into penalty trouble. The one thing about it is that, you know, they were third in the league in penalty killing, and they have, you know, vastly improved that element of their game. And I think that, you know, even if they do, you know, have a parade to the box a little bit, they're far better equipped to kill those penalties than they have been in the past.
This team really looks like it's, you know, it's hard to find flaws in their team. And another team, by the numbers, by everything, looks great as per usual, and that's San Jose transitioning to the San Jose LA series. I mean, there's, again, it's hard to find a flaw in day-to-day if you watch this team in the regular season. And they seem to have drawn really well here with Los Angeles. How do you see this series going?
Yeah, I would agree with that, and you know, like I always checking out when it comes to picking a sweep, because it's so hard to, you know, to predict that. I think it's hard, you know, hard for any team to win four games in a row, and you know, conversely, it's hard for any team to lose four games in a row. But I really do think, you know, notwithstanding that San Jose had a stumble or two in the final week of the season, the way they had been playing for the, you know, the 2.5 months before that, they were really one of the top teams in the league, and I saw an urgency in their play that I haven't seen before. Like, you know, people will look at Thornton's numbers being down, Marlowe's numbers being down, Heatley's numbers being down, but I look at the way those two guys, especially Thornton and Marlowe, played, and, you know, they're aggressive on the forecheck. You know, they're peeling back harder on the backcheck. They're just playing a more complete all-around game. I think halfway through the season, Todd McClellan finally got to these guys a little bit and said, look, you know, we're not going to ever win anything unless we just get a more consistent two-way game from everybody in on the lineup. And you know, after that mid-January stretch where they lost a whole bunch of games in a row and things were looking really, really grim, you know, they got their act together. I like their goaltender this year. Mm-hmm. You know, Niemi in the second half has been terrific. The fact that he has gone through four playoff rounds in the past, I think, doesn't hurt you. You know, their defense isn't maybe, you know, the strong suit, but, you know, Marc-Edouard Vlasic was a lot better in the second half. I think Douglas Murray is a tremendously underrated player. You know, huge and hits hard, and I like their pieces, and I do think that San Jose is going to get by LA, you know, very, very easily.
Funny you mentioned the defense, and Douglas Murray actually is a player, kind of reminds me of Robin Regier, just, you know, less heralded and not, you know, playing in Northern California where there's not much attention. And you look at that defense and you mention, you know, there's, obviously you didn't mention, but there's Dan Boyle, who's clearly, you know, their number one guy, and then Murray and Vlasic. Do you worry at all about this defense moving past the first round, assuming that they do beat LA?
Well, then it depends on matchups, doesn't it? And you know, so depending on what the next matchup is, it, you know, it could be, you know, very interesting. You know, if the first round unfolds according to seed, they get Detroit in the second round, and, you know, Detroit is the team that they handled last year in the playoffs, so I think that they could handle them again. You know, if it's Anaheim, if there's an upset along the way and you know, a two meets a four, you know, then it gets real interesting. Then it gets real interesting, because then I do think that that San Jose's defense would probably not match up particularly well against that that top Anaheim line. But, you know, I mean, you know, this is an aside, obviously, but I always think that one of the things that's most ignored is in projections, when people make the types of projections that we make, is those matchups. You know, there are just some teams that, you know, that match up better against other teams, and some teams that match up worse against them. So, you know, like, all we can do is talk about what's happening in the first round, and then, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, sometimes, you know, the team that you don't want to play, somebody else takes them out along the way, and you don't have to play them, and the path is a lot clearer to the Stanley Cup final.
You're exactly right. I used to do hockey polls, you know, Colorado, Detroit, they're going to get there no matter what. Now you can do a bracket of three options of how teams would play against different teams. I totally agree with that. You know, Eric, on LA, that was a team that I thought nobody wanted to play against, and then they get the injuries, more so obviously Kopitar than Williams, who you wrote this morning may return but won't be 100%. They have Oscar Moeller now on the top unit, at least they did, you know, in the top power play unit, at least they did on the weekend. Is it just a case of unfortunate circumstances that may be the downfall of this squad?
Yeah, because there are some teams that are able to overcome key injuries and percolate along. I mean, you know, we've heard all about Corey Perry's Hart Trophy candidacy, and a lot of it is based on those 15 or so games that Ryan Getzlaf missed, you know, when he got all those facial bones broken, and they didn't really miss a step. I mean, they won a lot of games during that period of time, and it's hard to lose a player of Ryan Getzlaf's ability and have everybody pitch in and change the style a little bit and get the great goaltending that they got from Jonas Hiller and find find a way by hook or by crook to win games. Mm-hmm. And actually, LA won the first handful of games after Kopitar got hurt, but their offense has gradually dried up ever since. And I think that was one of the things that they tried to address at the trading deadline when they brought in Dustin Penner. I think they realized that they didn't have enough scoring on that team. You know, they've got a lot of guys with 20, but they don't have anybody with 40. And so if you're trying to score by committee, and if there aren't a lot of guys that are just, you know, like bona fide natural guys that, you know, that routinely give you 35 or more per season, and if the one guy that does fit that category, mm-hmm. Arjit Kopitar, isn't there, then it is really difficult to replace him. And I think that's what you've seen. I mean, 11 goals in the last 7 games. The power play isn't, you know, clicking at all right now. You know, Penner, I don't think, has been what they thought he would be. He has not produced nearly along the lines of what he did in Edmonton the last year and a half when he really picked up his game. And so I think that, you know, they're a team that a lot of people are overlooking. Now, you know, I think internally in the dressing room, I'm sure that they're, you know, meeting right now saying, look, nobody is giving us a chance. Ergo, there is no pressure on us. So let's just go out and play the way we can and rely on our goaltender. And they do have, you know, a couple of, you know, blue-chip young defensemen like Doughty and Johnson, and they will try to, you know, to grind it out, and they will try to keep it low-scoring against San Jose and steal one of the first two games and then see what's what. I mean, you know, any team can beat any other team in these playoffs, but I do think that, you know, that the Kings, everything will have to fall right for them to have even, you know, like a remote chance against the Sharks.
We're joined by Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail and Globesports.com. And Eric, a lot of the matchups, especially in the West, are familiar matchups, and, you know, leads me to Detroit and Phoenix, a team that, you know, very interesting series last year, stretched it to 7 games. The difference for me, the biggest difference for me, aside from obviously having been a year, is the loss of Zdeněk Mihálek on the back end. Do you think that's a significant factor in this series?
Yeah, absolutely it is. You know, last year I had a great first round. I went 7-1, and the only one that I missed was Phoenix-Detroit. I picked Phoenix in that series, and for a while it looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't get the job done at home in Game 7, but I really thought that they, you know, that what the way Phoenix had played, and especially the way, you know, Brizgalov played last year when he was in the MVP conversation, that they had a chance against Detroit. And, you know, if you talk to the coaching staff in the off season, you know, it was Mihálek's departure, largely because he didn't, you know, he wasn't, it was the uncertainty of where the franchise might be that really prompted him to go to Pittsburgh, that he was the hardest guy to replace. You know, you can replace Matt Lombardi with Éric Bélanger. You know, they have a lot of, you know, interchangeable parts in that thing, but he was their ice time leader, and that is always a key stat, if, you know, if that indicates the confidence that coach has in a player. And so, you know, what you ended up getting was, you know, they brought in a couple of other players, you know, Roosevelt, and, you know, they're hoping to get some of what Mihálek brought, but they never really did. So, you know, Jovo's been hurt a little bit. So I just don't think the Phoenix is quite the same team that they were last year. They were a better team last year. Now, you know, Detroit, of course, has its issues as well. You know, Zetterberg probably isn't going to be ready to start, and they weren't great going down the stretch. So it's not as if they don't have issues themselves. They are a year older, especially in, you know, certain key positions, and their goaltending is vulnerable the way it was last year, too. So, you know, it does look like a coin toss series, but I think at the end of the day, Kenny Holland was saying that experience often, you know, is the tipping point when a series is very close like that. And so this year I am going to pick Detroit because I do think that their experience will be the thing that takes them, you know, gets them over the top.
Yeah, so far I'm in agreement with you with all your predictions that maybe the most interesting series, maybe not from a television perspective, but from an on-ice perspective, is Anaheim-Nashville, and specifically the Ryan Perry Getzlaf line versus Shea Weber and Ryan Suter. Is that as good of a matchup as you're going to see forwards versus defensemen?
I agree. And then, you know what? I'm going to pick an upset here.
Okay.
I'm going to take Nashville in the series. Now, I know that that's not the logical pick because of how well Anaheim has played down the stretch and how they, you know, seem to have a lot of the pieces of the puzzle that, you know, lead you to believe that they could go a long way. I mean, you know, there are people, and I guess, you know, I put myself in that group. I mean, they could get to the Stanley Cup final. But often, you know, the traps and the landmines are in the first round. And Nashville is a team that has never won a playoff series. And sometimes I believe in the law of averages that, you know, to be as consistent as they've been year after year and to have come as close as they have year after year. I mean, people forget last year they had Chicago on the ropes. It was 2-1, and they had to, you know, they had the edge until the 59th minute of the fourth game, and if they'd gone up 3-1, who knows? You know, they could have taken the Blackhawks out there. So some time Nashville is going to pull an upset. So I'm going to pick them this year, and I'm doing it mostly because I don't want to pick four favorites in the West, because that's kind of cheating. But I also think that you can make a case for them. I mean, they'll be playing against Dan Ellis, likely. You know, they know Dan Ellis very well because he played in their organization. I think that they, you know, they ultimately let go. Ellis obviously has a lot to prove. But I think that, you know, they feel that he might be a guy that they can get after. So I just think that, you know, that, as you say, Weber and Suter, I mean, who is best able to to deal with that number one line? I think those two guys probably are. You know, Perry and Weber know each other well from the Olympic team, Getzlaff too. And Suter and Bobby Ryan played on the American team. So that will be a great matchup. I think that there'll be a lot of bench coaching involved in that. I think Barry Trotz is one of the best coaches and one of the best bench coaches in the league. Obviously, you know, the issues that you have there with their scoring, because and certainly they haven't had a lot of help down the middle. Right. Even Mike Fisher, after he came over from Ottawa, struggled a little bit to find the offensive range. But if they can get some goals against Anaheim, I think they have the ability, especially if they get the lead in the game, to be able to, you know, shut them down.
You know, on that Ellis point, Eric, you mentioned his, you know, having played in Nashville before, and there's been a fair amount of turnover in that roster. Do you see that as an advantage more so for Nashville, because, you know, Barry Trotz knows them really well, and the goalies and coaches know their weaknesses, as opposed to kind of Ellis coming up against guys, you know, knowing their tendencies?
Yeah. Well, the only thing is, I mean, you know, since Ellis has left, I think that Nashville has turned over their roster pretty significantly.
Right.
So, you know, there are a couple of guys like the Martin Urats of the world and the David Legwens are still around, but, you know, the Hornquist wasn't there, and you know, obviously Fisher wasn't there too. So I think that, you know, that he will prepare for them as if they're just another team. But I do think that, you know, that Barry Trotz and the coaching staff, who've been there forever, know exactly what makes this guy tick. And I think they know how to push his buttons. I mean, I like Ellis. I had a chance to talk to him in the Anaheim dressing room about 3 or 4 weeks ago. You know, he's got lots of personality. He's got lots of confidence. And, you know, he was the guy, their guy, you know, until they gave Emery a shot. And then Emery was their guy. And then Emery got hurt. Now he's their guy again. You know, there's a lot of guys that would fold under that sort of pressure, and he's not one of them. He seems to have, you know, just come in and done a remarkable job for them. So I like him as a guy, and I think that, you know, he probably can get the job done. I'm just interested to see how this plays out. I mean, the one thing that we know from watching the playoffs the past however many years is that somebody somewhere is going to record an upset that we didn't see coming. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm going to roll the dice and say it's going to happen in this series.
There you go. Eric DeHatch of the Globe and Mail and GlobeSports.com. Thank you very much for your time today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, my pleasure.
Sure. Thanks, Eric.
Okay, great.
Right.
Thanks. Bye.
Take care.
p.m. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, our special playoff preview edition. We just heard from our good friend Eric DeHatchick. Richard conducted that interview earlier today. In case you missed any of that interview or our interview with Kevin Allen of USA Today, best way to find that interview is to subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes and have it automatically downloaded onto your iPod each and every weekend. That way you have your, you know, when you're supposed to be at work, instead you can be listening to your iPod and catching up on all your latest hockey news. While you're at it, might as well follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. We have 1 hour left. Let's start breaking down the Western Conference playoffs.
Vancouver Canucks versus the Chicago Blackhawks.
Vancouver's reward for finishing first overall in the NHL is to play the Stanley Cup champions. We've spoken ad nauseum about why I don't at least think this is fair. You know, Eric DeHatchick also tends to agree with me. Actually, I probably agree with him more than anything. But, you know, here we are. Vancouver plays Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, the Chicago Blackhawks. Their arch nemesis, the team that's defeated them the last two Stanley Cup playoffs. Is this year going to be different? Is this the year the Vancouver Canucks get their quote-unquote revenge on the Chicago Blackhawks?
Before I answer that question, I think that it's unquestionable that Vancouver got a bad matchup here. I think Vancouver would have loved to have matched up against Dallas. Nobody would argue with that.
They would have swept Dallas.
because
slept Dallas,
is nowhere near as good of a team as Chicago is, even though they're not that far away in points.
That's right.
But I think I have to go back and agree with what Eric Duhacek of the Globe and Mail said, minutes ago with Richie. This is a different team. This is a team that retooled. They went out and got Ballard and Hamhuis. They went out and got Malhotra and Torres. And the proof is in the pudding by the fact that they were more dominant this year. Henrik Sedin and Daniel Sedin, Daniel Sedin had more points. But Henrik Sedin didn't have as many points. Kessler actually had more goals but less points. A few other guys had less points. But Luongo, I thought, had a better regular season than the year before, even though he won the Olympics. And I think that even though this might be a bad matchup, I think that people are going to think, okay, Chicago, they got in. Look out, Chicago's going to, totally upset Vancouver's dream season. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think this year's different. I think Vancouver's got just more depth, and I think Luongo's been, dominant all year. And I can't bet against Vancouver this year. I just can't. I've tried to find a reason to do it, but I just can't, Richie.
This is I think it's a lesson. It's not as interesting a series as I think people think. Because, you look at net, okay? Last year, Niemi was pretty good. But Luongo versus Crawford. I think we all know who the better goalie is there. It's Luongo. Behind the bench, Quenneville, Vigneault. I mean, Quenneville's a little maybe more experienced in the playoff runs, but I think that's a pretty big wash for the most part. And then you look at the back ends, 1-4, probably take Chicago, 1-6, maybe take Vancouver. So, I think the defenses are close to a wash as well. You look at the forward groups, in the first line of Chicago, obviously, you have, Taves and Sharp and Kane. Well, Sedin, Burrows. I mean, which one do you take in a playoff game? Maybe it's a wash. Maybe it's a wash. And you look at the next group of players, you look at Kessler, maybe Hossa. Boland here, Boland's not being in the lineup is going to hurt, or if he's back, they're not really sure right now. That'll hurt. Chicago's depth isn't what it was last year, as Eric mentioned last segment. I mean, the guys like Buffalo and Versteeg, guys who were probably second-liners, were playing on their third line, aren't what they were, aren't there anymore. Kopechki, you're going to bank on him. Bickle, these guys are going to bank on him. Stahlberg, you're going to bank on him. These guys are playing significant minutes. Michael Frolik, who I like, hasn't yet come through there in Chicago. So, second line down, I like Vancouver, and I know Malhotra's not there, and I know that's a huge loss. That's going to be maybe their downfall. Not necessarily sure, but maybe their downfall later on. Not in this series, as far as I'm concerned. I think Vancouver's forwards as a whole are better. I think their defense is about the same, and I think their goaltending is better. And I think you taking all those things into account, I think Vancouver in this series is going to win, and I don't think it'll be as difficult as people think. Now, the one concern you may have is, and I understand this, is game one. Say Chicago goes in there, Drew plays a good first two periods.
Yeah.
Vancouver as a city, as an organization, there's a doubt there. There's a doubt.
If there was a choking sound to be made right now, it would be made.
There's a doubt. And you don't want it to creep in. And more so, I think, even now in the fans and the players. Mike Gill's done a good job making this team professional and not being worried about that, that or the aura around the team in the past. But it's still there, and, how do you discount a team that has Jonathan Taves as the number one center.
Right.
Arguably the top, one of the top three players in the world. But on paper, if you play the game on paper as Vancouver, Chicago, 5-6 and shots 4. Shots against Vancouver 12 because they're playing with a lead more often. Chicago 7th. Pretty close there. The goal differential, Vancouver doubles Chicago. Penalties is what I mentioned to Eric. The Canucks are undisciplined. And he mentioned that they're great, they're the top, top penalty killing unit, top penalty killing team. Malhotra loss hurts there. Faceoffs hurts there.
Yep.
So that could be an issue. But Vancouver's power play is great. Chicago's power play is
but
great.
But there's one guy that's not injured, and there's one guy that is dominant on both the power play and the penalty kill, and that's Ryan Kessler. He stands in front of that net on the power play while the Sedins work their magic, but when they get a penalty, Kessler's the first guy out there as well. And Vancouver might be
He has to play a lot more tough minutes now without Malhotra, though. A lot of more tough defensive draws.
And, you mentioned Vancouver being undisciplined, but they've got the third best penalty kill in the league.
Right. And as their power play is exceptionally good as well, and their penalty kill is good, and their power play is exceptionally good as well. So I mean,
Richie, when you talk about these matchups, okay, with
Chicago's penalty kill is bad, but Vancouver's power play is good. Combine those together.
I think when you look at the series and you look at the difference between say this year when these teams meet and the previous years, the big difference is going to be Chicago not having the same offensive depth.
Yep.
And Vancouver now having...
Can't ignore it.
Well, I mean, and Vancouver really now having that offensive depth, even with the Malhotra loss...
And Torres for the first two games.
And Torres for the first two games, which I don't think you can discount.
You can't.
But I think Vancouver will be able to still get through that. And then you look at the... It's almost like there's been a role reversal of these two teams. But, you know...
It's called the cap.
Yeah, well, of course, it's called the salary cap. That creates a role reversal when even...
See it in sports all the time.
Yeah, one isn't necessary. But... Also, I think that Chicago, you know, I know that they're, you know, peak physical condition, everything. They've got to be tired.
This is
how many years in a row.
See, I agree with Drew there. They look tired.
Look, it took them 82 games this year just to barely squeak in there.
They do not have the same momentum as they did last year.
They have no momentum. They really shouldn't be there. Dallas should have taken care of business against Minnesota yesterday. So Chicago barely gets in there. They went to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals last year.
They've all played in the Olympics.
Played in the Olympics. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals the year before. The conference finals the year before. Sorry. They've probably played some of the most hockey over the last three years. More, you know, Taves and Kane have got to be tired.
There's the motivation there. I mean, the motivation's always there, Drew, but is it there?
You always want to defend the cup. But it almost seems like they won their cup just getting to the playoffs this year.
When you look through the teams and you really try and find ways for Vancouver to lose, you know they're going to win probably, at least in my opinion, because you're finding ways. If you can have to look really hard to find ways for them to lose,
that's why I thought
they are going to win.
That's the same thing I said about the Philly-Buffalo series. I thought you guys were looking too hard to find reasons not to pick Philly. I think here it's a similar thing.
I don't think Philly's a well-oiled machine like Vancouver, though. I think Buffalo right now, this juncture of the season, is a motivated, rested team.
And guys, when you talk about role reversal, last year at this time, or you know, leading up to the playoffs, we were talking about can Vancouver's second and third defensive pairing
handle it. Now
it's unfortunately Vancouver is going to. I think Vancouver is going to score too many goals in this series.
What do we harp on?
It's not going to matter how well Seabrook can keep.
What do we harp on last year? The defenses versus the defense. We should pull up the clip from last year's show.
Well, it was,
what is it? Their depth wasn't good enough.
Defensive.
If he's healthy, another year. Fowler, throw him in there.
That's been the mantra of teams building any cup winner for the last 3 years. Is you need the defensive depth. And now Vancouver. I mean, even though they're banged up on the blue line.
They'll apparently all be there for the game one.
If they, you know, if they're all going to be there for game one, then you look at the defense they're rolling out there, and that defense does go six deep, and and even the guys who they didn't really expect to have to rely on, they now know, given that they played so many quality minutes during the regular season, hey, I think we can handle these guys. These guys are going to be okay. Should we have to take a step back and maybe not ride our horses as hard as we'd like to because they're not in peak game shape?
Right.
And Alex Edler's not going to be in peak game shape.
Pays off in rounds 2, 3, and 4.
Absolutely, it does. Let's go to the predictions. Let's start with Ezra.
I'm going to take Vancouver in 6, and I think there's going to be a few games, at least one game out of the first two in Vancouver that Vancouver's going to blow Chicago out.
I was moving between 5 and 6, but Chicago still is. I know you talk about tire, talk about a lot of things. They're still a darn good team. And I think that they're going to, I think Vancouver in 6 is my prediction.
I'm going to make it 3 for 3. I'm also going to echo your sentiments. Vancouver in 6. I think that what happens here, they split the first 4 games and then Vancouver wins the next 2. I think just Chicago hits the wall. I say 4-2 Vancouver. They win it in 6 games. Let's go to break. When we come back after this, we're going to preview the San Jose Los Angeles series. You know, any of our predictions, in case you missed any of them from earlier in the show, they're available at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and available on our website at www.illegalcurve.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Playoff Preview Special Edition live on Sports Radio 1290. Minutes to 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Special Edition Playoff preview show here on Sports Radio 1290.
Three series to go, Drew.
That's right, three series to go. In case you've missed any of this program, we've heard from Kevin Allen of USA Today and Eric DeHatchik of the Globe and Mail. The show is available in its entirety on iTunes. Search and subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Get the program sent directly to your iPod each and every week.
The San Jose Sharks versus the LA Kings.
A battle of California. Interesting note in these playoffs that all three California-based teams did make the playoffs.
It was Eric Dash today that said that more California teams than Canadian teams this year.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. Exactly. So good for California teams. And had Dallas actually taken care of business last night, you would have seen all five Pacific Division teams make the playoffs.
That's true.
Which is, I'm slightly disappointed that that didn't happen, because I think that would have been quite an amazing feat.
Dallas didn't deserve to make it, though, Drew. They weren't a good enough team.
That's true, but hey, they took it right down to the wire, and if you're going to take it that far, you might as well win it at that point in time. But anyways, we're on to San Jose and Los Angeles, and sort of a shame when you look at this series at what it could have been versus what it's going to be.
Well, yes, in the sense that what those teams could have matched up against each other. Had LA not lost Kopitar, they never even would have finished seventh. They would have been locked in a five. Probably.
They would have been higher than that.
Yeah, but I agree with what you're saying, Drew. It would have been a dynamite series. It would have been probably maybe even a second round series. And now it's going to be the first round series without LA's best player. And LA, the team that has had trouble creating offense. They can hardly get shots for. They're 23rd in the National Hockey League in that stat. And, you know, their power play is 21st in the NHL in producing power play goals. When you're not great at creating shots for yourself and you can't make up for that on the power play, you're in trouble.
You know, you look at LA, and I mean, it's been their problem is goal scoring. And I mean, yeah, I know you can say in hindsight, but in hindsight, it almost seems like they should have signed Ilya Kovalchuk.
I think out of
people
do believe that, and there's some truth to that.
They've been trying to find goal scoring all year, and that's what the guy's good for.
But they want it on their terms. They don't want to ruin their cap's flexibility, which they still have, by the way.
Yeah, I know they still have but I mean, at some point in time, you got to go for it.
The cap, no. That's an argument.
Anyways, it's an argument for another day and time, of course. But you look at this, and, where does LA if LA is to pull the upset here, if they're going to be the 7 beating the 2, where's it going to come from?
It's going to come from that top 4 defensemen. It's going to come from Doughty, Johnson, Scuderi, and Mitchell. They have to play out of their mind.
Just shutting down the top two lines on San Jose. Everybody thinks San Jose is a one-line team.
No, they're not.
But they're not.
Not at all.
I know that, but I'm saying they're. You know, for the casual fan, they think Thornton, Marlowe, Heatley,
and Drew. All those guys had down years.
I'm talking about for the casual fan. But really, the key for San Jose's success. I would think it starts with Joe Pavelski.
Yep. They have seven. Well, he's better than Thornton in the playoffs. You say he's better than Thornton right now in some ways. They're 7 deep in terms of offense.
And I mean, you got Pavelski, you got Klo, you have Couture, and you have Setoguchi.
That's right.
Young future of the San Jose. That's why the future still looks bright in San Jose.
Oh yeah, of course.
I mean, even if people think that they should finally make a run, who knows if that's going to happen? But I mean. That's a separate issue entirely.
Sure,
we'll talk about that as the playoffs go on,
right.
Of course.
Yep.
But, those are the guys. Those are the real keys to the San Jose team.
Drew, forward-wise,
yeah.
San Jose is far better than L.A.
Well, there's no comparison.
I mean, everybody in this room agrees.
Even with a healthy Kopitar and a healthy Williams.
Not as much better, but still better. Williams,
by the way, cleared for practice.
Yeah, but he's not healthy. He's going to be playing injured.
Yeah.
He's always injured, but he's a productive player, but I mean, he's not the center they need right now.
It comes down for San Jose.
But look at the next, Drew. You move for a second. You move to defense.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go.
You're taking LA's defense over San Jose's defense.
Well, you're taking LA's defense over many of the defenses in the NHL.
Eric mentioned it earlier, too. He said, one of the best defenses is a good offense, and San Jose is a really good example of that. When you're playing the other team zone all the time.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how
pushing
bad
the puck forward. Your defense, defense isn't terrible, and that the addition of Ian White has certainly helped. But it helps to be in the offensive zone all the time. And San Jose is going to count on Boyle and Murray big time, and Vlasic. And when you're getting to count on the Jason DeMers and the Ian Whites, you're going to be a little bit more worried. But I think that's a concern more later on. LA doesn't even really match up with their top lines. Don't really match up anyways to create it. There's not an issue there. San Jose and LA, San Jose's forwards and LA's defense, that's a superstar matchup right there. But the other way around, San Jose's weakness is not exploited by Los Angeles. And I think the goalies are a wash.
And Richie,
really, you think the goalies are a wash? You think that Quick is as good as, that Niemi's as good as Quick?
I think they're the same. I'm not a big fan of either.
Really?
I don't hate either. I just not a big fan of either. I think coaching wise, I would take McClellan, but I don't mind Terry Murray out there. So I think when I look through to it, I think that, you know, you say, okay, LA's forwards, the gap between forwards and defense, sorry, forwards on these two teams is significant for me. And the gap between their defense is significant, but not as significant. And that's where the difference is.
Well, I just don't
think that's... And also, there's, you know, deeper crews, right? So you go four lines deep as opposed to three defense pairings deep.
No matter how good LA's defense is, and don't get me wrong, they're good. I just don't think that they can totally shut down the top two San Jose lines.
And exactly. If you're going to beat San Jose, can you beat them 2-1?
I don't think so. Because, I mean, I don't see LA scoring more than two goals a game.
And can you get the puck? I mean, San Jose is a good faceoff team too, guys. San Jose is the second-best faceoff team in the league. LA is 10th. San Jose is second. Stoll's great. But they got other guys on this team, and the San Jose team that can win draws.
Boys, well, with Kopitar out of the lineup, and this probably isn't going to be much different than, you know, what San Jose likes to do anyway. San Jose, we've watched them a lot over the years, especially, you know, post lockout with Thornton. Not a very fun team to watch. They like to hold onto the puck. They like to get it deep. They've got a lot of big, strong forwards, and I imagine what Todd McClellan and the Sharks mm-hmm. are going to try to do against the LA Kings is try to wear down their defense, and, you know, LA's got a lot of great defensive defensemen. It starts with Doughty and Johnson, and you go right down the lineup with Scuderi and Mitchell,
that's right,
and on and on. And Alec Martinez is, you know, he's a rookie, but
yeah.
You have to think that San Jose wants to wear that defense down, and, you know, San Jose's got an amazingly good power play. One of the top five in the league, I believe.
They have the third most power play goals for this year. Los Angeles, 21st. The thing about the PK, Ezzy. San Jose's PK is a weakness. 23rd most power play goals against. But look at LA's power play. When your weakness is matched by another weakness, it's negated.
It's why it's a great matchup for San Jose. And I don't think LA was going to do anything at this point in time, given their injuries. But this is really not a good matchup.
LA, Ezzy likes LA more than we do.
Drew and
well, Ezzy likes LA because he predicted them at the beginning of the year.
But Drew, getting back to the X factor of goaltending in the series, wash to me. There's no clear advantage. I might give Quick the slight advantage over Niemi, but I don't think this is. I mean, the reason why, you know, for everyone out there, when usually we go with, you know, the goaltender stealing the series, it's when the offense of the other team is clearly better, and it is the case here. But I think that's negated a little bit by the fact that LA's got a very, very, very talented defensive core.
I don't think Quick is good enough to steal the series, but I think he is better than Niemi, especially with that defense in front of him. That's all I'm saying on the goaltending front.
I don't know about that. I think they're pretty similar. But Scuderi, you know, sorry, Green and Martinez are a good 5-6, but in the playoffs.
But Richie, I don't
think that matters a lot, but with the top four ahead of them, they're not going to see much of the top six in San Jose. That's going to be the big matchup there.
But wouldn't you agree, though, that LA's,
right,
LA's not riding their goalie like Montreal's riding Price or Buffalo's riding Miller because of the way they play? Quick played less games this year for that exact reason.
And to that point also, by the way, Drew, what I'm trying to get at there is the third defense pairing for LA, which is a strength for the most part.
Yeah.
When San Jose is really riding the top six and not that third line, which is fine, they can throw one of their top seven guys onto that third line. The matchup is determined. San Jose doesn't have a top line like a Philly, a third line like a Philly.
Right.
So it's not as big of a difference. I think that's there. You know, as he speaks about the goaltending, I think that Quick would have to steal the series, combine with the defense for them to win, steal multiple games in the series. And I don't think Quick has Jaroslav Halak in him. I don't. But do we think Jaroslav Halak had it last year in him? So who knows?
Let's go to the predictions.
Okay, I want to say, though, I disagree with Richie on Quick having to steal the series, and it's because I think San Jose's offense is gonna vanish.
It's happened before.
I think that, and once again, I wouldn't be surprised here if Richie takes San Jose in 4 or 5. I'm gonna take LA in 7. I think San Jose is not gonna score any goals at home in Vancouver. I think LA is going to steal a game in San Jose and take the series in 7.
As he says, LA in 7, Richie.
Sounds 8-5.
What did I say?
Well, I think Richie's closer to being right. I'm going to go with San Jose in 5 as well. I know we're mimicking.
You're counting in every single pick except for Tampa, which we have the same picks for every single one.
Not every single
except
one.
Except for Tampa.
Really? Well, the best way to find out is to go to IllegalCurve.com. That's where all our picks are going to be posted. And, of course, on our Twitter page, at IllegalCurve. Also on Facebook, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Let's go to break. When we come back, the 3-6 series, the one that the people of Winnipeg are most concerned about, that is Detroit versus Phoenix. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey
Isn't
Show.
Isn't it ironic?
No, this isn't. Anyways, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Detroit was taken to 7 games.
It's true.
I think that this is going to be a good, solid, another 7-game series. And I think that Phoenix...
Do you notice you're doing the predictions at the beginning?
Yeah, I'm trying to say, you're just popping them right out
there. Hey, I didn't say who was going to win in 7 games. I just said 7 games.
Okay. Fair enough, absolutely.
But Detroit is going to get Zetterberg back. Looking
well,
good.
We think so.
We don't know. Detroit is, is worse than the Iraqi Minister of Information in terms of getting accurate injury reports.
Drew, you have someone in the inside
working for
CSIS, and I have someone on the inside working for the Detroit Red Wings.
Working for McDonald's,
and his name is Dave Minuk, and he's told me that Zetterberg will be back. But
by the way, nobody believed whatever as he just said.
And Dave Minuk is the writer for LegalCurve.com and does the daily drama in the desert. So that's the plug there.
But, and he's my BFF.
Wow. I know you said that on air, right?
Keep focused.
Anyways, let's look at the Detroit-Phoenix series. They played last year, so it's a rematch of, as you mentioned, the 7-game series. Both teams are very similar to last year.
Except
really the guy who we have probably mentioned more times on this program than any other person ever.
Eric Bélanger?
No. Zibanek McCulloch.
Zibanek? Wait, are you
I
all,
can't pronounce
Drew,
that
all
name.
Of a sudden you're going to start calling him Zibanek?
I cannot pronounce
that name for my life.
And Drew, we can
mock the amount of times I bring up his name. I think he's that important. And I think when you have a guy like that log in huge minutes for you...
It's a good thing it wasn't a drinking game with his name.
That's right. It's a good thing because you'd be passed out in the corner. But maybe it's a bad thing. Sorry. Had to. When your top minutes really, Drew... You know, Mahalik was playing them last year, tough minutes. And by tough minutes, I mean playing against Datsyuk, playing against Zetterberg, playing against Franzens. Then you throw those minutes to Derek Morris and somewhat to Kleslin, even Keith Yandel, Jovanovski. Again, guys, I mean, look at those defensemen we just mentioned. Arakoin and Roosevelt worked in there. Arakoin's slow. Jovanovski's never been great defensively. Yandel still has a lot of work to do defensively. Kleslin's all right. Morris is okay. They make mistakes, though. Roosevelt, that defense... against the Detroit offense, and I don't care how old the Detroit offense is. Maybe the Detroit offense will be look old next series or the series after. But right now, this is the key to me. It's the second highest shots for team in the National Hockey League in Detroit, playing against the 28th team in the NHL in shots against. Now, Phoenix hasn't been leading that many games to be that low in the shots against. This is a bad matchup. That matchup together is bad. Is Bryzgalov good? Sure.
Yep.
Can he be great? Sure. Can it be great for 7 games?
I think that Detroit's age would be more of a factor if they were playing a young team.
Well, we talked about it all year.
And they're not. They're playing the fourth oldest team in the NHL. So, I mean, I think Detroit's probably the oldest team in the
NHL. I'll check for you right now, Drew.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to assume that Detroit's top four, but it's not like Phoenix is young, playing with a bunch of young, eager beavers who want to knock off the big giant that's been there. Phoenix is old. They're old. They don't match up that well with Detroit, and Detroit is smarter than Phoenix.
Drew, Phoenix got a lot of goals from Keith Yandel. They got a lot of points from Keith Yandel.
He's second most on the team.
Guys like Shane Doan and Ray Whitney and Eric Bélanger were basically carrying them down the stretch, and Phoenix, famously Detroit's fell from fourth to sixth, and this is who they're going to get to play against.
Detroit's the oldest team, average age 30.8. Phoenix is the fifth oldest team, average age 28.2.
You know, in not just Drew's defense, but in that comparison's defense, they might be the oldest, but they are kind of heavily weighted, towards gaps. They have a bit of a...
Age is great. I'll take Detroit's talent. I don't care how old they are. Look at the talent that Detroit's trotting out there.
Yeah.
Now, if Zetterberg's injured, what does that do?
I mean, it hurts their depth. Of course it hurts their depth, and it hurts the talent level on the team. But, I mean, there's still so many players there who can add offense to your team. And Datsyuk is still a phenomenal player. And you know, maybe Franzen isn't consistently doing what they want him to do. He's still a terrific player. And, you know, Bertuzzi is slow and sometimes selfish, but he can still produce offense. Dan Cleary's a hard worker. I mean, you're talking about a lot of players here. Drew Filppula, quietly effective. Holmstrom always in the playoffs. If Hudler needs to step it up a bit. Darren Helm's beautiful skater. Justin Abdelkader can get his get dirty. Drew Miller can kill penalties. If Mike Modano needs to get a slap shot to score goals. There's too many options here. You're looking at your list of those players, and you list a bunch of guys who can be game breakers, and then you look at Phoenix's roster, and you go, Eric Belanger, like top three or four in the team in offensive production. The guy can hardly make the Washington Capitals top, you know, top scoring lines last year. Shane Doan at 60, Ray Whitney 57. Radim Verbata is their third leading scorer.
Those, by the way, those weren't Doan and Whitney's ages. Those were their point totals, just for the record. Yeah. They're not. Those were their point totals.
And you look at Phoenix's offense. I don't really see much there. Detroit always is successful in the small things, too. Third in the NHL in faceoffs. Phoenix is seventh, so that's good for them. But Detroit's third. Power play, you know, penalty kill again. The Phoenix Coyotes, by the way, just to let you know, they led the most shots against, period, over the course of the season, Ezzy. The Phoenix Coyotes have allowed the fourth worst NHL team for power play goals against. And Detroit's power play goals for this year was fifth. Another toxic combination. So not only are the total combination of shots for, shots against, but it's a really, really bad combination for the power play penalty kill. I really don't think the series is as close as other people are making it out to be.
Yeah, and Richie, Andrew, you know, I know we got to quickly get into break here.
You're good.
Okay, we have a few minutes. Okay. I think that even though Dave Tippett, great coach, great hockey mind. He had a great career at being a good faceoff guy and a defensive player. He's done a great job of getting these guys to work hard for him, and he's gotten a lot out of a guy like Lauri Korpikoski that he didn't have any success really before he came to Phoenix. But Detroit possesses the puck too much, and this is going to sound like a broken record because everyone agrees with this. You've got too many talented guys on the roster that as soon as the playoffs start, these guys turn it up. Thomas Holmstrom, Johan Franzen, I realize that Zetterberg might not be 100% and he might miss game one, but these guys, their point per game totals go up. Darren Helm, he had his best year. Also, a guy who's already got a Stanley Cup under his belt. Their numbers and their play just goes up, and Phoenix is... It doesn't matter how hard you work. If you don't have the puck on your stick and the other team is getting the power play goals and dominating you along the boards because they've got grit too. They've got Todd Bertuzzi, they've got Chris Draper, they've got the grinders, so it's going to be tough.
I also think that an advantage where Phoenix had a strength, that being in head coach Dave Tippett, I mean, again, Detroit's got a better head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike Babcock's the best coach in the NHL, so mm-hmm. Dave Tippett might be, what he's done in Phoenix is very impressive. He might be, you know, second or third best coach, right, you know.
Given the
situation, Mike Babcock is the best coach in hockey anywhere in the world right now, so you can't overlook that. Let's go. It's prediction time. I'm going to start with Richard this time.
You know, Drew, as you probably know, the way I just broke it down, I like Detroit in this series. I like them in six games, though, because I think Jimmy Howard gives at least one game to the other team. Okay. And Phoenix gets maybe lucky in an overtime game. I like Detroit in six.
Richie, what do I read to the audience what I have written down there?
Detroit, as he's got Detroit in six.
I wrote down my picks last night before the show. I was going to say Detroit in seven, but I think that Detroit's going to win three out of the first four games, and it's going to be just like 1996, Drew.
I know.
Detroit in six.
I didn't pick it, by the way, based on that symmetry.
I know, but I'm going to go Detroit in five. I'm tempted to go Detroit in six just based on the symmetry, but I'm going to go Detroit in five. And what happens after that? Well, that's the question. That's the great question that, you know, who knows? But that's what everybody's waiting for. Everybody's waiting for Phoenix's season to be over, the other shoe to drop, and like I said, who knows? Isn't it ironic? Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. It's like rain. One final segment on this Monday night special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Normally we're on Saturdays from 9 till noon, so we're thrilled to be here Monday night breaking down all the matchups for the first round of the NHL playoffs. It's time to go to the final matchup, the 4-5 matchup in the Western Conference.
The Anaheim Ducks versus the Nashville Predators.
We were just saying off air that of all the series, this is sort of the one that's the most up in the air. I mean, not a surprise given that it's a 4-5 series and the teams are unbelievably close to each other. I think these teams were separated. Were these teams tied, I think? And it was just the win record.
Yeah, they both had 99 points.
Yeah, so it was the win. Yeah. These are two very evenly matched teams. I mean, you look at Anaheim and you look at that. I mean, Richard, you spoke about it with your interview with Eric DeHatchick earlier. You look at Anaheim with that unbelievable top line, the best, probably the best line in hockey. And then you look at the defense pairing of Shea Weber and Ryan Suter, maybe the best defensive pairing in hockey. And, you know, it's no wonder you can sort of sit back and you can look at this series in all sorts of different ways and say, I just don't know.
When you look at those two lines, you know, that matchup, it's to me the most intriguing matchup of the playoffs, this first round. Perry Getzlaff and Ryan against Suter and Weber. Because of a number of things, you know, the Perry Getzlaff Ryan line gave trouble to guys like Rafalski and Lidstrom, and as good of a combination as you're going to find. But because of the style they play, Lidstrom is not that physical, and those lines just dominate the puck below the goal line, and he couldn't get the puck off them. You're playing a combination of defense here, and Weber and Suter, who can skate, who can hit, who can move the puck, who are big enough to out-physical the other team. There's everything in this matchup is power versus power, and skill versus skill. It's as good of a matchup as you're going to find. Who wins the matchup? I mean, it's hard to say. And if you say they kind of just, you know, they're a wash, which is hard to say in that context, they're a wash. Yeah. But say they are. And then say it comes down to other matchups, guys. Damo Solani's not on that line.
No.
Is he the X factor? You know what? To me, he is. Damo Solani at 40 years old is the X factor in the series. Because you throw him on the power play, but also at even strength, he's going up against guys who aren't as skilled, obviously, as that top two pairing. Whether it be Klein, whether it be Jonathan Blum, whether it be Frank Bouillard, whatever it may be.
You're talking about Nashville's third, fourth, fifth,
sixth defenseman.
That's
where the drop-off is. That's where the loss of Hamhuis comes into play here.
Yep.
Right.
That's where it's significant.
And I think that Nashville is going to give Anaheim some problems, and I think that they're going to keep the games low-scoring and close. But I think the reason why I'm going to go with Anaheim in this series and not pick Nashville for the upset. We had Eric Duhatch on, and he said, you know, there's going to be an upset. It's got to be someone. If it's not the Rangers, it's got to be Phoenix, or it's got to be Nashville. And the reason why I'm not going to go with the upset here, Drew, is because I think that the Ducks have so much scoring on two lines. How many points did that top line get? Over 200, I think.
98 for Perry, 76 for Getzlaff, and 71 for Ryan.
Yeah,
and so then you've got that second line, which is, it's a veteran line, but you've got Koivu, who had a bounce-back year this year.
Well, I'll say, as he quickly in that, Koivu only had 45 points in 75 games, so I was just going to get to that. I thought Koivu looked terrific over the weekend. Yeah. He looked fresh, he was skating hard, playing with Solani, Blake on the other side. I thought that line looked really good.
But Richie, remember, people were wondering if Koivu was going to come back this year, not just Solani.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you're right about
that.
So,
I mean, if you factor that in, that's huge. I mean, Nashville has a major flaw. When you play a defensive style, and you bore teams to death, and you just muck and grind it out, and guys like Jordan Tutu don't look that out of place. When a guy like Jordan Tutu, he's very limited in what he can do. I love Jordan Tutu. He's a Manitoba boy. But they rely on guys like Joel Ward. There's a limitation.
They don't have the scoring.
The key player to me for this series is actually David Legault for Nashville, in terms of Nashville.
In terms of being
talking about the X factor. Like, the best players can be the best players. David Legault is going to be a huge factor for me.
Is he good enough?
He counted on a lot.
Is he good enough?
I don't love his game.
I mean, he's playing by himself. He's playing offensively.
He's been asked to be more offensive, as per our interview earlier with Josh Cooper, the Tennessean. A few weeks back, speaking about how Fisher's acquisition has really allowed Legault to be free to be a little bit more offensive. The funny thing about the Anaheim team, guys, here is they're not good for shots for. They're not good in shots against. They're the fourth worst in the league in both categories. It's a weird mix. You know, they weren't great in the goal differential category. They're not awful at taking minor penalties as they once were, but they're not great. Power play, they were terrific, and that's going to be a key. But penalty kill, they weren't great. Face-offs, they weren't great. I mean, this isn't a team that jumps out statistically, but they really pumped it up in the second half of the season. On the other hand, you look at Nashville, very good penalty kill, but awful power play. And so that's the mix there, right? You got Anaheim, good power play. Nashville, good penalty kill. Anaheim, bad penalty kill. Nashville, bad power play. So
strength against strength, weakness against weakness.
That'll be interesting because some of those things are going to have to bounce back. And by the way, by power play here, I'm going by goals, because if you create more chances and don't score as much, you still create more chances, and thus you get more goals, right? So,
right.
But Richie, they might have a very good BK, and they might have two of the best defensive defensemen in the league.
You're talking about Nashville right now.
Nashville, and you,
are,
you
and also
and Shea Weber and Ryan Seward and Pekka Rinne, who's a top ten goalie in my opinion, and played way better in the second half. But when your top scorer is inconsistent Sergei Kostitsyn and a David Legwand who is not going to put fear into the Ducks defense, you're going to have problems. You're going to have problems dealing with Anaheim Ducks team, who we speak of momentum. That team's got momentum. At one point they were in ninth, then they squeaked ahead to eighth, then they ended up getting into a home ice advantage spot. Mm-hmm. So it's Nashville, if they end up doing something, it's going to have to be a guy like Pekka Rinne getting a couple shutouts.
Yeah, because I don't know who's going to score for Nashville. I don't know who scored for Nashville all year round.
They win a lot of low-scoring games, Drew.
I know, but that's one thing when you're playing against the dregs of the NHL. You know,
Nashville's leading scorer was Sergei Kostitsyn.
Yeah, well, I know, and they jettisoned him from Montreal, and Montreal's, could have
been... They had to because of the offense.
Of course. You know why they got rid of him.
You're right, Drew. Where do you get the offense from, right?
But where do you get the... That's exactly what it boils down to. Where do you get the offense from
in Nashville? JP Dumont retired, but still skating on the team. That's weird.
I mean, Steve Sullivan, a guy who I think was contractually obligated to draft in hockey drafts for 5 years consecutively, but unfortunately that was 15 years ago. I love Stevie Sullivan, but you can't
be expecting... Well, Stevie Sullivan, was the last time...
You can't... Exactly. I mean,
injuries, Drew, have been a factor there. We're talking about David Legwand and Colin Wilson, and Colin Wilson being a key, but they bring players around.
Do you think Colin Wilson's ready to do it and play? Is he at that level where he can do it in the playoff time?
I mean, they're lucky, by the way. Just to let you know, you mentioned Steve Sullivan, but he is back.
I know.
And that's a big, a month and a half out, that's a big key for them, because they have a lack of offense. But even so, Drew, I mean, guys like David, I think David Legwand's a key. Hornquist trying to pick it up as a key. You know, Kostitsyn, Irat. Yeah, I mean, you're not looking at a very offensively capable team. But you look at, you mentioned goaltending.
And that's
Pecorino. Is it Ellis? Is it Emery? Is it Hiller? Are they good enough?
I don't think it matters. I think they can, even if Hiller isn't 100% and they have to play two goalies, I think they'll still win the series. I really do. But I agree with you. Ahead second round, I don't like it.
Well,
against San Jose, I know I didn't pick San Jose, but San Jose Anaheim, I'd probably go with San Jose, actually. But I don't have them going there. But
let's do second round predictions after the first round's over, though. But I mean, goaltending, I think, is a huge issue here for Anaheim. Ray Emery coming back is a nice story. I don't fully trust them.
Anaheim and the numbers don't do them justice. I think they're better than the numbers dictate. Nashville is what they are, kind of thing.
Right.
And I'm peaking at the right time, yes or no. But we didn't even talk about it because the segments are, we still have so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Adding Boschman, development of Fowler, which we've talked about over the past few weeks. Vishnovsky playing really well. Ludman logging big minutes. That top four has really, really, really been a huge factor in this team's improvement.
It's a lot better of a top four than it was when we started the season 8 months ago or something like along those lines.
And they've also been able to play together. Ludman logs the toughest minutes on the team, and Boschman comes in there and takes away the Fowler's pressure and allows him to play in all situations.
Before we move on to cheers and jeers, because how do we wrap up a show without cheers and jeers? Before we get to that, let's go to the predictions. Ezzy, your prediction in this series.
When I was handicapping this last night, I was originally going to take Anaheim in five, but I think I'm actually going to take Anaheim in seven, because I think Pekka Rinne is going to steal one game in Anaheim. He'll get a shutout in one of those first two games, because I think that's just how good he is. But Anaheim will eventually, when it comes down to game seven, I think they'll win it, because they've just got too much firepower. Corey Perry, Hart Trophy right there.
I'm going to choose next, because I don't want to hear from you anymore complaining about how I'm piggybacking onto yours. That's Richard there. I'm going to say Anaheim in six.
Okay. I got Anaheim in seven.
Oh, okay.
I'm with Ez. I think great minds.
So you're piggybacking on Ez.
That's right. You know what? I think this is a team. This is a tough matchup for Anaheim.
Yeah.
But I think overall their skill's better, and the veterans kind of offset. I like the skill.
Okay, let's go. This final segment. Cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra, quickly, cheer or jeer.
I'm going to cheer a team that didn't make the playoffs, but they played spoiler and knocked a team that had a chance to make the playoffs. I'm cheering the Minnesota Wild. Won on home ice. Did a favor for Chicago, but just good for them because their season was pretty uneventful. So my cheer goes to the Wild.
Richard.
You know, Drew, I'm going to cheer, maybe surprisingly or not, the Montreal Canadiens, because with all their injuries and all, and you look at that back end and you see what Jacques Martin did, he just got his 600th win the other day. This isn't a team on paper that really should be there. It really shouldn't. Well, I know the East is weak, but give Jacques Martin credit for you know, working through all the media pressure, and Subban and Price for all the criticism that they get and for everything that's affected that team this year. I don't think they're going to win this first round, so I'm giving them my cheer now because the next time it's probably going to be a jeer.
Well put. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer all those NHLers who are going to go play for their countries at the World Hockey Championships. I think it's been a long year in the NHL, you know, 82 games, you know, training camp, everything else. I think it's a good commitment that these guys, that those who aren't in the playoffs are going to go overseas and play for their country. That's always a nice. So I'm going to cheer those guys who are going to go and play overseas in the World Hockey Championships. That's it for this special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew, now that the show's over, are you going to put some shoes on?
I'm wearing flip-flops, Ezzy. It's okay. Anyways, a thank you to Kevin Allen of USA Today. A thank you to Eric the Hatchick of the Globe and Mail for joining us. We'll be back Saturday from 9 to noon in our regular time slot. This program will be available on iTunes for download in case you missed any of it. Check out Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe. You get it sent to you immediately.
Right.
You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Be sure to continue to check out www.illegalcurve.com. That's where we have our daily Drama in the Desert feature and our new feature about the future of the Atlanta Thrashers. Thrashers on my mind. And until Saturday morning here on Sports Radio 1290, I get to say it the way I always want to say it. Good night and good luck.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Saturday morning at 9, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.